We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Jamal Adams joins CMV, Carlin, Maggie, and Bart today and every Tuesday at 2 p.m. to talk gangrene football exclusively on your flagship station for New York football and the NFL. The Fan, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN FM, New York.
Is there a reason that you're playing Rumble in the Jungle from Jethro Tull?
I figured any reason. Something, and you know, we're gonna have Tino on. I figured you guys grew up around the same time. This is popular, right? No?
Oh well, look, I mean, you know, I saw Tull a couple times.
Aqualung, right?
Aqualung, tremendous, one of the great albums of all time.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yep. I'm into that 70s music.
All right, good. Uncle Robbie, you're a multifaceted dude. And speaking of multifaceted dudes, joining us right now is our good buddy Paul Dottino. Do we have our Paul Dottino billboard? Oh, it's coming in momentarily.
P Dot, okay. What's up, baby?
Hi, Paul.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. Although, when I hear Rumble in the Jungle, I'm thinking Foreman Ali.
Yeah, so am I. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Now, I have to say, I do think Jethro Tull first and then Foreman Ali, which actually
I don't even know who Jethro Tull is. So.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, I understand, Paul. You know. Paul, when I grew up, it wasn't just sports, Paul. I'll say that.
I understand.
Okay.
When you review what happened Sunday night, why were there so many unblocked guys getting to the quarterback? We saw that a lot on Sunday night. What went wrong in your mind?
I'll make it as simple as I can for you guys. I was always told that the fundamentals for an offensive line come down to two basic things that you have to have in place before you have a chance to be effective. Number one is alignment. Number two is assignment. If you have alignment and assignment down, you've got a chance to be successful. If either one of those things are missing on a given play, chances are it's going to blow up. And that's what I saw with the Giants in Dallas. My assumption is that the alignments were probably right because Eli Manning has a lot to do with squaring that stuff away when he's up at the line of scrimmage, trying to get communication with the center. The center then makes the line calls, and that adjusts the assignment. Usually, though, the alignment is going to be the one that's got a better chance of being accurate. So let's assume for a moment that the alignments were okay against Dallas. That says to me, in all likelihood, because there were so many busted, wide-open guys coming after Eli, either between gaps or against open space, that says to me it was the assignment part that was busted. And how did that get busted? And that's where the question becomes, and that's what Pat Shurmur better be trying to figure out right now. Were the assignments busted because either nobody got the proper line calls at the line? Is it because the wrong line calls were made by the center? You know, Eli didn't make the wrong calls. So did the center make the wrong calls? Or did the guys just not know what the calls were after they got them? Let's say the center made the right calls and they were the correct ones. Did the guys not understand, hear the right call, and then not figure out what it was they were supposed to follow through on? Because if you look at the six sacks that the Dallas Cowboys got, none of them were on physical bull rushes where a guy got thrown to the side or backed up into the quarterback. They were all against open space gaps and where guys got basically they whiffed. And honestly, fellas, to me, more than anything, that points to the assignments being broken. And so they need to figure out why that was the case. Only they will know internally. That's not something anyone can figure out by looking at the film. That's got to come from inside the offensive line room.
Mm. What's your assessment right now at a quarterback, Paul? I understand the offensive line, but what do you think so far about Eli after 2 weeks?
Well, there are people out there who are trying to throw flames and torches at Eli Manning. I think he's played very well in the first two games. I thought he played real well against Jacksonville. I excused the two missed passes that he probably should have hit. Because let's face it, not all of your 35 passes during the course of a game or 30 passes or whatever it's going to be are going to be right on. You're allowed to make a couple of missed throws every game. And so I had no problem with him in Jacksonville, and I did not have much problem with him in Dallas either. Because as Shurmur said after the game, and he was right on with this, there was one writer in particular was going after Shurmur hard, saying, well, what about all those checkdowns, you know, all those dump offs, which weren't getting any yardage. So how effective could they be? And Shurmur's response was, OK, so you want him to hold the ball longer when he has no chance to, if he holds the ball, or you want him to throw the ball downfield and force it into coverage. Because he didn't have enough time to let the downfield routes develop because he was getting crushed.
And when you look at it that way,
Eli played well.
And he did force one down the field, I think, in a double coverage with Odell Beckham, and it was almost picked off. Those are much riskier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, I love the lack of intelligence shown by somebody who says, well, you should have done this. Yeah, but if you do that, trust me, everybody and their mother's going to complain why you did that. And the one you're talking about was in the back of the end zone.
Yes.
To the left of your TV screen. He forced a bomb into Odell in the back of the end zone. There were three Cowboys there. I believe it was Heath picked it off out of bounds.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you would have seen more of had Eli thrown the ball downfield more. It's an absurd question.
That I agree with you on. The one thing is you go back to the Jacksonville game, and he had a couple of missed throws, missed opportunities. The problem is there aren't that many opportunities out there. So when there is a miss, it's a big deal. It becomes a bigger deal because that can change the game for you when there aren't that many opportunities out there to begin with.
Well, it becomes that part of the risk and reward factor, Evan, because you're right. There are so few opportunities because everything else right now in this offense is broken. If the offense was running properly, and if he was allowed more time, if the running game was getting more things going, then they would have more than three or four or five opportunities to hit a big play. Maybe they'd have 15 or 20. And then, like any other normal quarterback, he'd be allowed to miss two or three, and it wouldn't be a big deal.
Hmm. Early in the game, I think it was the first drive the Giants had, they did not go for it from their own 48-yard line on fourth and short. Now, they did it twice later on in the game. Did you think they should have went for it there? What was your thoughts on that?
Absolutely should have gone for it. You know me, guys. I've never second-guessed a coach. I will not do that. I will tell you what I thought at the time, and I will admit to you if I was wrong or it didn't make sense. And there is no question in my mind that on that fourth and 2 inches or whatever it was, near midfield, there were a lot of reasons to go for it. You later saw why. Look, George Young taught me years ago, there is no better play on fourth and less than a yard than a quarterback sneak. And we've discussed this on your program before,
right.
That Tom Brady and the Patriots constantly go for it. And his success ratio is like 90%, isn't it?
He's the best that maybe that's ever done it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's ridiculous. Now, Eli had not gone for one of those since the year 2010.
Mm.
Coughlin aboard the quarterback sneak. He never wanted to put his quarterback in that position. My suspicion is because he would never really answer why, just that it was something he didn't want to do. I guess he felt that the QB was going to get hurt. That's all I can think of because it's a no-brainer play. And later on, you saw when there was even more inches to go twice Eli with a quarterback sneak converted. So that's the first thing. I'm sure he converts that play if they go for it. And I was totally thinking, you've got to go for this. That was my first thought. My second thought was, Dallas has just come out. Their crowd's foaming at the mouth. It's their home opener. They hit a bomb. They've got you on your heels. You need to punch back. You've got to counterpunch. Show the Cowboys that you're not going to be soft here. You're not going to let them and their crowd dictate the rest of the night. Punch them back. Stick them in the nose. Poke them in the eye. And tell them they're going to be in for a fight tonight. Instead, the decision was made to punt the ball. And I understand why he did it. There is logic on that side of it. You know, the crowd's going crazy. Dallas has the momentum. They're up 7-0. You don't make it. They get the ball at midfield. It's a short field. All of a sudden, it could be 14-0. I'm going to simply say to you, I think Shermer had some logic on his side. I also think I have logic on my side, and I would agree to disagree. I would have favored going for the first down.
And you know what I like? You can use the same argument to go with both points. Well, we don't want to give the Cowboys the momentum. Well, you give them the ball back. If you punch them in the mouth like you said, because I completely would have gone for it, that's the best way to take away their momentum. Continue the drive now by converting on a fourth and inches. I think that's the best way to combat that loud crowd.
Well, you know, Evan, again, I felt as I felt. I'm man enough to admit that I do understand there is reasoning on the other side of the pendulum. I don't happen to agree with it.
Well,
but then again, I don't get paid
good.
To head coach.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't get paid, but we're all right, and Coach Shermer was wrong. I mean, they should have gone for it. But let me ask you about the center position, because you got to feel bad, first of all, for the man, John Halapio. I mean, this guy's a great story. He won the center's job. It's a shame that he got hurt and his season's over. In the short term, is it John Greco? What do you see? Is this Spencer Pulley eventually taking over the job? How do you see the center position going over the next few weeks?
Yeah, coach has already said John Greco is going to be the first man up, and Spencer Pulley will be activated. Remember, they picked him up a couple of weeks ago after he was waived by the Chargers, and he was their starting center all last year. He's got more experience in the NFL as a center than Greco does. Greco was more of a guard over his NFL career than he was a center. But remember, Greco also had experience in Cleveland with Hal Hunter, the offensive line coach, and Coach Shermer, and he's been with the Giants since the middle of last season. So he's the first man up right now against the Texans. But you would assume that Pulley's going to be activated. Coach pretty much said as much this week as the number two guy. You would have to wonder if over the course of the next couple of weeks, as they can get Pulley more familiar with their system and their playbook, if he might wind up being the starting center at some point, simply because of his experience at the position.
Paul, how big a game is this? I mean, look, they're 0-2. They were a 3-win team last year. You know, they got to win this game against Houston. I mean, do you agree with that?
Well, of course. Look, it was a significant game they just played in Dallas.
No, of course.
This was almost a must-win against Dallas. And now, here's the problem, guys. We're all very emotional as fans. You know, every fan, every reporter, every coach, every front office person is very emotional about what they see on the field, because that's what makes sports great. They tap into your emotions. The emotions look at what the Giants have put on tape and say, this is bad, okay? They were pretty good in week one, but they lost. They were bad in week two, and now they're 0-2. The emotions tell you they are absolute stuck in the mud, and this is a terrible situation, and they've absolutely 100% got to not only win, but got to look good to make you feel better. Now, the facts are, there are three teams in their division at 1-1, and they're 0-2. So you look at the paperwork, and if you can detach the film and the emotions from it, they're one game out of first place. So, yeah, they're in better shape, wins and losses-wise, than our emotions would allow us to believe. So, yes, they need to go out there and beat a Houston team. By the way, I watched the first three quarters of that game on the TV in my hotel room in Dallas, and I watched the Texans. And, you know, it's funny. They gave the Patriots fits in week one, like the Giants did the Jaguars, and looked pretty good and must have felt pretty good about themselves. And then this past week, they looked like trash in their loss to the Titans.
You know what?
I mean, it was ugly.
You know what scares me about the Texans? They haven't played a game at home yet. So you talk about home opener, crowd foaming from the mouth. You're going to get that in Houston this weekend. This is their home
opener.
Darn
straight. Yep. Darn straight. And so, you know, here's the problem with the quicksand of mediocrity, that you got about 20 teams in this league and they just waddle around in it and try to escape it and then get sucked back in. Week to week, you truly don't know what team you're going to get. That's what makes these teams stuck in the quicksand of mediocrity. The Jets are one of the same teams, too. They were Super Bowl champs after week one. Now what are they after the Dolphins came and beat them? So that's what happens. The quicksand just fills up your pockets and your shoes,
by the way,
and it
Paul,
drags you down.
No,
but
no,
anyway, one
no,
final thought,
can
guys.
I guess why you mentioned that? Neither of us were sitting here saying they're Super Bowl champs after week one, okay? Let me just point that out.
Oh, that's for damn
okay.
sure.
Let me
that's
just point
fine.
That
that's
out.
Fine.
I mean, I don't know what Jet fans you were talking to, but you weren't talking to us about that.
No,
okay?
No, that's
we
fair,
expected-
fellas.
I don't ever
consider you, me, and Evan as part of those conversations.
Okay,
right, good.
Thank you.
But one
way,
final thought.
Go ahead.
One final thought.
Go ahead.
and that is Romeo Crennel is a defensive wizard. You know he is just literally salivating watching what happened in Dallas, because Jacksonville thought they could get to Eli with their front four, and they didn't blitz much. And the Giants showed that they could actually handle that fairly well. Dallas decided they're just going to send the blitzes left and right, and they're going to go bonkers after the QB. I think that's what Romeo Crennel is going to do. He'd be a fool if he didn't.
Sure.
And you know he's a master at doing it, and they've got a good pass rush. This is not the team, the Giants, or the defensive front. The Giants really need to play after putting that game on tape.
By the way, speaking of defensive wizards, I'm giving you a heads up if you're not aware of this already. 9 o'clock Friday night, must see. You have to see it. A Football Life on the NFL Network. So I just want to throw that out. If you didn't know about it, I'm giving you a heads up on that, Paul.
Oh, you know what, Joe? Fortunately, I won't be heading out to Houston until Saturday, so you know the popcorn will be ready.
No, I'm telling you, man, you got to see that. I'll be watching myself, you know that.
You know the problem with that, Joe?
What's that?
That guy, and I knew it when I was covering him on a play-by-play basis, he's a once-in-a-lifetime player.
Once-in-a-lifetime.
And if you didn't appreciate it when you were watching him, you really missed the boat, because we'll never see anybody like him again.
Completely agree. Couldn't agree more.
Thank you, Paul.
See you, Paul.
See you, guys.
Paul DeTino on the Giants. We'll come back. We'll take your calls. And it was also something. I was listening a little bit to this Knicks town hall they had last night. Okay. There was something Fizdale said.
That bothered you?
No, that was really interesting that I love, that I know you'll like.
Okay. By the way, Paul DeTino was brought to you by York Install Confidence, by RE/MAX. Visit RE/MAX.com to find your home and agent now. By CSEA Local 830, we work for you. And by Foxwoods Resort Casino, the wonder of it all.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.